I have three teeny tiny little scars right here on my left hand near my thumb. See? Choir, can you see that? All right, you're just gonna have to trust me on this, I guess. So these scars have been here since I was a teenager. I earned them while participating in a trust fall. You guys know what trust falls are. A trust fall is this awful team building exercise that mostly youth groups used to do all the time. I think maybe it's fallen out of popularity in this century because of things like my scarred for life hand. But what happens in trust falls is that several pairs of people will line up, linking up their hands and arms with a partner to form a soft place to land, while someone else will climb up onto a table in front of them, turn their back to them, and just fall backwards into the waiting arms of their peers. Sounds super safe, right? Yeah, we used to do that all the time. Ideally, no one flinched or winced or tried to pull away, and then the somewhat even distribution of weight onto all of those many willing hands would easily support the faller, who would then be lowered safely to the ground. Nothing could go wrong. Yeah, kind of like, so they're falling into their arms and then lowering them to the ground, kind of like the reverse of that, you know, light as a feather, stiff as a board game, except a little less seance-y. A thing of which I would never, ever know about, would never have played. I just heard about that. So here I was, the only kid from my kind of life, trusting hard that this group's confidentiality covenant was being honored so that no one in my little world would ever find out that I was depressed and struggling, because that's not what a Jesus-loving evangelical girl would admit aloud to a frazzled group of young sinners who needed salvation. So I was a part of the structural support team for the faller that day. Of course I was, because I was a fat kid as well. There was some unspoken size limit to who was invited to be a faller. It was never me. So down plummeted today's smaller faller, a smaller faller who had apparently forgotten about the set of keys or sharpened pencil or some such thing in his back pocket, which is what ended up carving divots into my hand. I never participated in another trust fall after that day. But I do remember other things about my time in that little group. I remember the marble jar friend nature of what happened in that little ragtag group of misfits and creative thinkers who just didn't know what to do with all of their differentness. I remember being the place where one of my classmates came out of it as a lesbian. That was a big deal in the late 80s. I remember one man telling us for the first time that he thought maybe he needed help with his growing dependency on alcohol. More than one person disclosed abuse and then was led to help and safety by our adult advisors. I remember saying aloud for the first time, sometimes I'm really, really sad and confused about who I am and what I believe, but I can't say that to anyone in my church youth group because that's the last thing we're allowed to feel. And my marble jar friends thought that was a perfectly normal thing to say, and they let me just say what was true. What a gift. What a risk. And what an amazing amount of trust. The truth about trust is, it is really hard. It's really, really hard. It's hard for me because I know myself, and I know that I have betrayed trust. And I think I'm a pretty good person, Joe, just like you. So I know, if I know the dark truth about myself, and the fact that I am capable of betraying trust, then how can I ever trust you? And so when I speak of trust, it's not as someone who has mastered the art of trusting or being trustworthy, as if anyone up here and if anyone comes up here and claims any different, I would advise you not to trust them. Because we're all people and we all screw up. Maybe we screw it up especially in beloved community, where we all show up living in different and intersecting spaces of privilege and oppression. That's messy. That gets really, really messy because, see, I think I can be trusted to speak about only a few things from experience, really. See, as someone who has lived in poverty, I can trust that my beloveds of financial means can trust me when I say that our beloved faith, Unitarian Universalism, has a classism problem. And we have to acknowledge and address it before we can be trustworthy accomplices with the Poor People's Campaign, for instance. I trust that the menfolk here can trust me to say that we have a patriarchy and fragile masculinity problem right here among us. And we must acknowledge and address that before being trustworthy allies and accomplices with the Me Too movement or all manner of women and femme empowerment. I trust that those of you who are lean-bodied can trust me that we have a long way to go with body positivity and eradicating fat phobia in our beloved community. That's a thing, right? But I cannot be trusted to speak for anyone whose oppression I do not experience. Only people can speak for themselves. I can tell you that I believe that Black Lives Matter, but I cannot be trusted to know all the things I still need to learn to behave like I believe it. I can talk about the International Day of Trans Visibility, look what I just did there, all day, and it doesn't mean I can be trusted to know anything at all about the ramifications of visibility or invisibility to my trans beloveds. I can say Assalamu Alaikum every Sunday morning like we usually do, especially when Matthew's here, but I cannot be trusted to know how it feels to worship every week in targeted space like our Muslim family. So the truth about trust is really in that marble jar, isn't it? And the danger of that metaphor is how easily that can happen. It can be tipped over and we have to start all over again. That's really daunting. That's a lot of, I'm not even looking forward to cleaning this up after service. That's a mess. I'm really scared sometimes to act for fear that I will stumble, betray your trust, and not be seen as a good ally. And boy, do I love me a big old tray of fresh ally cookies. It's true. And so I wonder if maybe trust in the context of beloved community is too big to grasp individually. I wonder if it's like trying to make a trust fall happen when there's only one person holding out their skinny little arms for someone like me to fall into. That doesn't work. I wonder if the whole key to trust in beloved community is the act of linking together and holding each other accountable for holding each other up. I wonder if maybe the key to saying unequivocally that I trust that my beloved faith community is what they say they are is that when Ryo betrays my trust, I can still know for sure that I can fall into other sets of linked arms. And here's the part that I think is beautiful. For the time when I can't go near Ryo because I don't trust him right now, some of you who were not betrayed by Ryo can hold him up and show him restorative justice, though he's broken his vows 1,000 times, just like all of us. Ryo, thank you for trusting me with your good name, friend. I trust Ryo for the record. In December of 2017, so about a year and a half ago, I was privileged to be able to go before the Ministerial Fellowshipping Committee in Boston, which is a big interview in which they ask you just a whole lot of questions to determine whether you are ready to be fellowshipped as a minister in this faith. And after passing that was when this church voted to ordain me. Whew, that's a lot of trust. So when I went before the Ministerial Fellowshipping Committee, one of the things that they do is, well, like I said, they ask you a bunch of questions, but we can choose our first question. Nothing else about the interview can we know going in, but we can choose one question to tell them to ask us, and that will be their first question. And this is the first question I chose. The Ministerial Fellowshipping Committee said to me, "Tell us about a time when your faith community let you down, and why did you stay?" I chose that because I wanted to tell them about you. I wanted to tell them about this church and the way it has upheld my faith in wider community and in Unitarian Universalism, and in the ways that we have trusted each other and let each other down, because we do that too. And so I told them about a time, I don't know, maybe it was 11 or 12 years ago now, that we had some turmoil in this place. It got real bad for a while over some things that we didn't agree on. Some of you were here for that, and some of you are nodding because you know what I'm talking about without me even saying more. And we had small meetings in people's houses about this. We had congregational meetings. We weren't sure which way we were going to go on a big decision that this church had to make. And I knew which way that vote should go, by golly. There were a lot of people that didn't agree with me. There were people that I loved, that I trusted, that I had gone on chaperoning on trips to Boston with. I had served on committees with these people who were on opposite sides. We had a microphone here and a microphone here, and people who were in favor of doing the thing came over here, and people who were not in favor of doing the thing were over here. And there were people that I loved coming up to the wrong microphone. That's right. And when the vote was cast, it didn't go the way I wanted it to go. And I sat right over there, sort of where Steve is sitting right now, and I wept, and I wept, because I thought we had done a really bad, wrong thing. And after that vote happened, and it was really close, if I recall, it was something like 48% to 52, or something ridiculous like that. After that happened, there was no applause by the folks who had voted the way that the vote went. There was a whole lot of silence. And then, when we were adjourned, nobody left the room, as I recall. Nobody left the room right away. And one by one, those people that went to the other mic to speak up for the thing that I thought was wrong came to me and hugged me. And I went to people who were on the opposite side and I hugged them, and we said, "We'll get through this. We're not leaving the table. We may disagree about this one thing, but we're still a family. We are still beloved community. We still can trust each other." And we looked in each other's eyes and we embraced each other and we cried and we were mad. And we got through it and we kept on loving each other. And that's the story that I told the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, and I told them the name of this congregation. And I told them that it is because of you and because of what I have learned about trust in this place that I know what beloved community can look like. And it's wonderful and it's amazing, and I trust you. I trust you because of what you all have taught me about how to do that. So how can we trust and be trustworthy in accountability and in covenant with each other, in our ever-expanding understanding of who the we is that we're talking about, the we and who we are? And what's my role? Sometimes it's really hard for me to know. Do you ever feel that way? Sometimes I really just want to sit and weep and listen to somebody who lives inside black skin or Jewish heritage or Muslim faith or a trans body get up in our pulpits instead of me, because I'm not always sure what a middle-aged you cisgender white woman has to add to the moment, or what I can say that can be trusted. And that's the truth. But I'm here, and we are all here together. And so for such a time as this, right here, right now, I have my word and my covenant. I have my covenant to those who struggle to trust because your life doesn't give you any choice in the matter, that you will not rise alone. We all have this choice right now. We can say loud and clear that your lives matter to us. And if we perish, we perish, but we are still going with you to speak truth to power, because for better or worse, I have cast my lot with you, and we are all in this together. Though I've broken my vows 1,000 times, I come, yet again I come. Trusting is hard. It's hard work. Being worthy of trust is hard work. But we do it, don't we? Every single second of every day, we do it. We do know how to trust, or we wouldn't have gotten out of the house this morning. And that's really brave and risky, for some more than others. Everything about trusting each other is brave and risky every time. So, beloveds, may we be worthy of the risk. May we live into our callings to be a beloved community of trust. May we be fully present right here, right now, trusting in our care and love for each other. And may we trust each other enough to live and love fiercely, like people with nothing left to lose. Maybe so. Now let's sing something cheerful together, shall we? Number 1021 in your hymnals, Lean on Me.
We all have pain. We all have sorrow.
I will now extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we will carry with us until we are together again. While we do that, I invite you to do one of three things. Join hands if that's what you want to do, and you already do it. If you do not want to join hands, but you are welcoming of a hand on your shoulder, you can do this here, right here, with your hands clasped. Or if you don't want to be touched, that's fine too. You can just do this. Everything about trusting each other is brave and risky every time. May we be worthy of the risk. May we live into our callings to be a beloved community of trust. May we be fully present right here, right now, trusting in our care and love for each other. And may we trust each other enough to live and love fiercely like people with nothing left to lose. May it be so. Let's sing our closing benediction together twice.